Well, it's March 19th, 2023, 2030 hours. That's 2030 hours. And Ward Green here with you for our daily study, little children. I hope it's going to be a quick one, maybe, but not necessarily, because we can never tell how long they're going to be. But I'm thinking that I'm not, because I'm still in recovery mode, and I did have a pretty good day today, but I'm not full strength, so I think we'll stick to the material if we can, the program material. But oh, I'll tell you what I ate though today. I ate some interesting things, some roasted lentils that I'd had in a bag for a long, long time, years. I had these lentils, and because they're so dry and roasted, they weren't going to be going bad, so they were still tasting, you know, they were salted and they were preserved by being salted and so on, so they were still tasting very much the same as when I last ate them. But I never really was interested in eating them before, partly because they were crunchy and dry, and they just didn't appeal to me because there was no you know, real moisture in them or anything, or they didn't, it, not that they tasted bad, but they weren't a flavor that I was particularly fond of. But today I was so hungry, I could have eaten anything, because I don't have anything to, I mean, I'm trying to avoid calcium, and I don't have anything much else to eat other than things in cans, and I've got fish, but I don't want to get mercury poisoning by eating too much fish, so I ate these lentils, and then I found some beef. Well, I've had this beef jerky for a long time. One bag of it was sealed up, so I opened that bag, and I've been eating some of that too. That was the last thing I ate. But I also found some medjool dates. I've got these medjool dates. I think I'll order some more of those. But they're very good, very, very good. And that was a source of sugar too. I need some natural sugar for the blood sugar, to keep my blood sugar up, I think, so that I don't get too too, you know, lethargic and too starving. So that I don't starve. But I mean, I'm eating potatoes that I fried too, or my home fries. So I've been finding things to cook and to eat. But I had an apple. That's right. I've had a couple of apples today. I have lots of food, but it's finding food that doesn't have calcium and staying away from calcium, just to see if that helps me. I'm not even sure if that's going to help me. And I'm also trying to drink a lot of water too, but I haven't really been drinking that much water, so I'll have to try and increase that. I want to get the calcium, assuming that I have a calcium overdose, you know, because of the vitamin D overdose. I'm still working off of that assumption, so I'm trying to flush out the vitamin D and the calcium, and protein helps to flush out calcium, so eating meat should be good for that. But there's everything. You don't really want to eat too much of any one thing. I also ate peanut butter in the morning and some walnuts with my vitamin K2, and I had some walnuts and vitamin K2, the two different kinds of vitamin K2, about 360 micrograms of each of MK4 plus MK7, each of those. And also, then I had peanut butter and honey with some crackers this morning, and basically, and my potatoes. And that's basically, I think, everything I've been eating today. I haven't, I'm probably forgetting something, but I think the medjool dates were, they were a great discovery that I had those in the cupboard. And I've got more of them, so they'll do me for a few days, I think, these medjool dates. They'll keep me going. And I mean, I'm not really, I don't feel bad at all. I don't feel bad, but I feel I'm not that strong. I don't feel strength. I feel a little bit of weakness, and part of that could be because I'm not eating enough too. That can cause low blood pressure. And then, you know, because I'm not getting enough salt, for example. Low blood pressure because I'm not drinking enough or eating enough food with salt in it. That can cause weakness too. So then you have to try to drink more water or salt and water to try and raise your blood pressure if you can, or keep it up. Not let it fall too low. Anyway, it's strange because I don't really know how healthy I should be right now. That's the problem. We never know how healthy we should be at this point in our lives. I don't know whether I should be stronger or whether I should be exactly the way I am, but you know, my mind, I think I need to judge my health based on how my overall feeling is in my head, you know, how I feel, whether I feel, you know, what's the word, I don't know, whether my mind is very strong and able to focus, and that's the other thing. Apathy is one of the symptoms of some of these things. Like, I think it's a symptom of one of the toxicities, but I think it's maybe calcium. When you have too much calcium in your blood, you feel apathetic, or is that the vitamin D poisoning? I can't remember. Or is that the iodine poisoning? I can't remember. Well, one thing about iodine, if you don't have enough iodine, you don't have the ability to learn as much. So you have to keep your iodine level at the right level. You don't want to let that get too low. Okay, so that's enough talk about food. I want to eat enough food so that I can feel strong. That's what I'm trying to do, I think, now. Trying to make sure I can keep my strength up and keep my blood sugar up and things like that, and not get low blood sugar. I don't want to get high blood sugar either. But I have a lot of good food when it comes right down to it. I still have a lot of food in cans. I have corn niblets. I have tomatoes in cans. I have, you know, I have chili and beans. I've got a lot of food, and I'm going to be going shopping again too, probably pretty soon, So let's get on now with the study, if we can, if we will, if you will, if we may. So, in the Wild Road article, we're up to, in part one, chapter four, we're up to paragraph four now, because we talked about the name of Ramesses and how it appeared in the Bible along with the name of the city of Pithom. Pithom and Ramesses were the two cities that the Israelites were forced to build as slaves of the Egyptians. And we also arrived at the conclusion, or the apparent truth, that it was under the Hyksos that the Israelites were slaves during the time of the Hyksos rulers in the Nile Delta. So paragraph 4 and 4, since Ramesses was a personal name, let's continue there, based on the name of Ramesses the First, when he was a vizier called Paramesu, it would be hard to argue that it had never been used. Most personal names have very long histories, in fact. Whether a district was named after a family, or, as was betimes often the case, the family after the district, it would be narrow-minded to assert any guess as fact. Fairly, the scholarship of the Bible is unknown to us. The blind acceptance of its pages is not so blind. Such acceptance also prevents errors from speculation. While we still speculate and research intently, we may always return to the Bible and favor it in the end based on its proven reliability alone, above all means. The benefit of this is well-founded stability of mind. The frequency with which speculation results in error, on the other hand, argues equally strongly for a book. That the book happens to be the Bible is not without a human element, as men wrote and compiled the accounts. Some believe in biblical infallibility, which then has to be tempered by the knowledge that men were involved throughout the history of its compilation, so that any infallibility could only have been a miracle which was a result of the Holy Spirit acting over all this time, even that of the collation of the various Bible texts. The miracle is how nearly infallible it is, after all. As far-fetched as this indeed is, it itself testifies, and to the extent that it proves true, does constitute a large part of a basis of our acceptance of its word. So the Bible itself testifies to us after all this time and all the translations and copies that have been passed down. And even though we know that Moses wrote the first five books of the Bible, or they're called the books of they're assumed, they're believed, I mean, they come under the name of the Law of Moses. They come under that umbrella. They're called the Law of Moses, the first five books of the Bible, right? The Pentateuch, it's called, including Genesis. But we know that Moses wasn't alive for much of what Genesis talks about. So we don't really know who wrote the first copies, perhaps, that were passed on to Moses, which he then copied and transferred on to us. We don't really know what the original writers were, or who they were, I should say. We know they were human, because language is a human gift, not given to the other creatures that God created. So, I mean, we don't need to speculate, because Moses could have been given all this information by inspiration. He could have just had Jehovah tell him all these things and he wrote them down. We don't need to know that there was another earlier writer who passed the notes on, passed the writings on to Moses before he wrote them down. We don't need to know that there was, or we don't need to speculate that there was a human writer other than Moses. But there's no need to be too certain either that there wasn't some other early writings, because we know writing was invented too, according to, not according to the Bible, I don't believe, but according to some other texts. I think it's the Book of Jubilees that talk about writing being invented by the first Cainan, who lived prior to the deluge. I think that there's an account about the invention of writing prior to the deluge in one of the non-canonical books, or one of the books that's not part of the Bible, and I believe it's the Book of Jubilees, if I'm not mistaken, but it could be some other book, I suppose. I believe it is the Book of Jubilees, but I'm not going to be trying to look that up right now. But we will look it up at some point, I believe, because I've written about it in some of my articles again. So we'll be able to read that at some point, hopefully. Genesis 19 now. Genesis 19, we remember what was happening with the angels that went down to look at Sodom and consider how bad that their sin was. And Abraham was talking to Jehovah while the other two humans, the two men went down, and now they're called, in verse 1 of chapter 19, they're called angels. So the two men that had come with the third man to visit Abraham, I should say, a little bit earlier, those three men that had come, two of them went down to Sodom, and now the two are called angels. Now the two angels arrived at Sodom by evening, and Lot was sitting in the gate of Sodom. When Lot caught sight of them, then he got up to meet them and bowed down with his face to the earth. And he proceeded to say, "Please now, my lords, turn aside, please, into the house of your servant, and stay overnight, and have your feet washed. Then you must get up early and travel on your way." To this they said, "No, but in the public square is where we shall stay overnight." But he was very insistent with them, so that they turned aside to him and came into his house. Then he made a feast for them, and he baked unfermented cakes, and they went to eating. Before they could lie down, the men of the city, the men of Sodom, surrounded the house from boy to old man, all the people in one mob. And they kept calling out to Lot and saying to him, "Where are the men who came in to you tonight? Bring them out to us, that we may have intercourse with them." Finally, Lot went out to them to the entrance, but he shut the door behind him. Then he said, "Please, my brothers, do not act badly. Please, here I have two daughters who have never had intercourse with a man. Please, let me bring them out to you. Then do to them as is good in your eyes. Only to these men, do not do a thing, because that is why they have come under the shadow of my roof." At this they said, "Stand back there." And they added, "This lone man came here to reside as an alien, and yet he would actually play the judge. Now we are going to do worse to you than to them." And they came pressing heavily in on the man, on Lot, and were getting near to break in the door. So the men thrust out their hands and brought Lot into them, into the house, and they shut the door. But they struck with blindness the men who were at the entrance of the house, from the least to the greatest, so that they were wearing themselves out trying to find the entrance. Then the men said to Lot, "Do you have anyone else here, son-in-law and your sons and your daughters and all who are yours in the city? Bring out of the place, for we are bringing this place to ruin, because the outcry against them has grown loud before Jehovah, so that Jehovah sent us to bring the city to ruin." Hence Lot went on out and began to speak to his sons-in-law, who were to take his daughters, and he kept on saying, "Get up, get out of this place, because Jehovah is bringing the city to ruin." But in the eyes of his sons-in-law, he seemed like a man who was joking. However, when the dawn ascended, then the angels became urgent with Lot, saying, "Get up, take your wife and your two daughters who are found here, for fear you may be swept away in the error of the city." When he kept lingering, then in the compassion of Jehovah upon him, the men seized hold of his hand and of the hand of his wife and of the hands of his two daughters, and they proceeded to bring him out and to station him outside the city. And it came about that as soon as they had brought them forth to the outskirts, he began to say, "Escape for your soul. Do not look behind you, and do not stand still in all the district. Escape to the mountainous region, for fear you may be swept away." Then Lot said to them, "Not that pleased Jehovah. Please now, your servant has found favor in your eyes, so that you are magnifying your loving kindness, which you have exercised with me to preserve my soul alive. But I am not able to escape to the mountainous region, for fear calamity may keep close to me, and I certainly die. Please now, this city is nearby to flee there, and it is a small thing. May I please escape there? Is it not a small thing? And my soul will live on." So he said to him, "Here I do show you consideration to this extent also, by my not overthrowing the city of which you have spoken. Hurry, escape there, because I am not able to do a thing until you are arriving there." That is why he called the name of the city Zoar. The city had gone forth over the land when Lot arrived at Zoar. Then Jehovah made it rain sulfur and fire from Jehovah from the heavens upon Sodom and upon Gomorrah. So he went ahead, overthrowing these cities, even the entire district, and all the inhabitants of the cities and the plants of the ground. And his wife began to look around from behind him, and she became a pillar of salt. Now Abraham made his way early in the morning to the place where he had stood before Jehovah. Then he looked down toward Sodom and Gomorrah, and toward all the land of the district, and saw a sight. Why, here, thick smoke ascended from the land like the thick smoke of a kiln. And it came about that when God brought the cities of the district to ruin, God kept Abraham in mind in that he took steps to send Lot out of the midst of the overthrow when overthrowing the cities among which Lot had been dwelling. Later Lot went up from Zoar and began dwelling in the mountainous region, and his two daughters along with him, because he got afraid of dwelling in Zoar. So he began dwelling in a cave, he and his two daughters. And the firstborn proceeded to say to the younger woman, "Our father is old, and there is not a man in the land to have relations with us according to the way of the whole earth. Come, let us give our father wine to drink, and let us lie down with him and preserve offspring from our father." So they kept giving their father wine to drink during the night. Then the firstborn went in and laid down with her father, but he did not know when she lay down and when she got up. And it came about on the next day that the firstborn then said to the younger, "Here I lay down with my father last night. Let us give him wine to drink tonight also. Then you go in, lie down with him, and let us preserve offspring from our father." So they repeatedly gave their father wine to drink during that night also. Then the younger got up and lay down with him, but he did not know when she lay down and when she got up. And both the daughters of Lot became pregnant from their father. In time, the firstborn became mother to a son and called his name Moab. He is the father of Moab to this day. As for the younger, she too gave birth to a son and then called his name Ben-Ammi. He is the father of the sons of Ammon to this day. So the two daughters of Lot preserved offspring for themselves from their father, since their husbands-to-be had been left behind and had been destroyed in Sodom. They did not escape with Lot and his family. So Lot's sons-in-law, that is, they evidently perished with the rest of the city. So Lot's daughters found a way to preserve offspring for themselves from their father. And this is the origin of the two families that we read about many times in the Bible, the sons of Ammon and the sons of Moab. Or the nation of Moab and the nation of the sons of Ammon. We read about these nations later on, of course, when the Israelites come back from Egypt. These nations are occupying some of the lands through which Israel travels and which they will later on even inhabit in some cases. So this is interesting. It's a very important historical thing as to where the sons of Moab and the sons of Ammon came from in the Bible. It's the source of the origin, the story of the origin of those nations in this chapter. And I remember something interesting from what Ron Wyatt talked about. He went to the cities that corresponded to the location of Sodom and Gomorrah on his journeys to the Promised Land, and he found these incredible sulfur deposits there, sulfur crustacean, you know, I mean, encrustments, what's it called? Encrustation or layer, a layer of sulfur on top of that whole area of, and apparently there were, you know, it was where there were, had been, there had been cities and people living there before this sulfur had come down on them. So it the evidence from the actual place of these cities testifies to the fact there was actually fire and sulfur that came down from heaven onto those cities, because there still is sulfur there now. He tells more of the, I forget all the details right now, but Ron Wyatt was the one that I remember learning this from, about the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah. And apparently he investigated this material that was covering these dwelling places, you know, that were right on the border of the Salt Sea. There it was, this district right in the south of the Salt Sea region, which is where we believe Sodom and Gomorrah was, actually. But it's interesting that there actually is the very evidence that would, the explanation for how the sulfur got there is in the Bible. We don't need to make up or invent an explanation, because we don't need to make anything up. It's there in the Bible about how the fire and sulfur was rained down from heaven upon the city. Where does it say this now? Let's see. Yeah, in verse 24, Jehovah made it rain sulfur and fire from Jehovah, from the heavens. And in one of my articles, I talk about this incredible shower of meteorites, I think it was, or something. There were meteorite showers at a certain time in history. And in my article, this is incredible. Let me try and find this. Let me try and find this. See if I can find it. Where would it be? Okay. Let's see. Yeah, it's in one of my articles. If I look up meteorite, it's a very uncommon word. Right. Right, okay, it's in the preservation article, but, right. There it is, it's in Joseph and On, Redemption of the Phoenix. That's another name for this article of ours that I wrote. It's in Redemption of the Phoenix, or Joseph and On, it's called. Joseph and On, Redemption of the Phoenix, that's the name of the article that we did look at the other day, too. If you recall that, we were looking at this article because we were looking at, well, let's see what I was looking at. Demetrius, maybe? No, it wasn't Demetrius. That was in the other article. It mentions Demetrius here. But we were looking at this article for what, I don't remember. But let's look up meteorites. Right here. In the newspaper The Independent Online in Britain in 1997, March 30th, they published the headline, Sodom and Gomorrah Destroyed by a Comet. So it wasn't a meteorite, but it was sort of a meteorite in a sense. But it was destroyed by a comet, was this headline. That's what this headline said. Of course, anything that comes from the heavens, of course, or anything that doesn't come from the heavens, it always comes from Jehovah, no matter where it comes from. But I mean, Jehovah is the creator of everything. But it was destroyed by a comet, say astronomers. So, and they calculate the Earth was bombarded by a particular, and is bombarded by a particular dense storm of meteorites over a couple of centuries, for for a couple of centuries, every 2,500 years. And the last two blitzes, it said, would have occurred around 2200 to 2000 BC and 400 to 600 AD, or Common Era, for the latter date. The first period is 2200 to 2000 BCE, and that's exactly the time period we're talking about, during the life of Abraham and his nephew Lot. Abraham being born in 2206 BCE, so it's a perfect fit to what these astronomers presented. It's quite remarkable. But Jehovah knew that this punishment was going to arrive on Sodom and Gomorrah. He knew that, because he prophesied it in advance, and he warned Abraham about it in advance, and they warned Lot about it. The angels warned Lot so that they could save his family, because he was righteous, and he wasn't one of these gross evil people who were sinning very badly and in a way that was very detestable to the true God, Jehovah. Lot wasn't one of them. He wasn't behaving the way they were, but he was saved. So in advance, though, Jehovah knew this, that this would happen. Jehovah was able to warn Lot and to even warn Abraham before it happened. Also, they said it happened again between 400 and 600 of the Common Era, or AD, and may have led to the fall of Rome. That's fascinating. That's very, very, very interesting, is it not? Abraham was living in this time period. He lived to be 100. I looked this up today. Abraham lived to be 175 years old, but his son Isaac lived to be 180 years old. 180 years old for Isaac, but I had thought it was slightly more than that for Isaac. But it's 175 years old that Abraham was when he died. He didn't die in a meteorite shower, though, as far as we know. He just died a natural death. But this fire and sulfur raining on Sodom and Gomorrah may have some real scientific basis for, or theory. What's the word for it? It may have a scientific explanation. That's what it is. That is fully... of course, not contrary to anything that Jehovah would do. Science cannot controvert Jehovah, because there's a scripture that says, let's see, let's look it up. Proverbs 21 and 30. There is no wisdom, nor any discernment, nor any counsel in opposition to Jehovah. That's right. So we can't really refute what Jehovah did by bringing Sodom and Gomorrah to ruin, by establishing that it was caused by a meteorite shower. That doesn't prove that Jehovah didn't do it. Certainly not. Even if it did, in fact, happen by means of a meteorite shower, it's still... was an act, according to God's word, it was an act of Jehovah's vengeance upon those cities. And we know from the Bible they were very wicked, and they deserve to be punished. There's no question. So, at least that is certainly how it appears. It's very, very disturbing when we read the account of how those men treated Lot and his guests. Is it not very disturbing, the way they treated them? They were going to try to sexually abuse these men. These other men who lived in the city were going to try to abuse the guests of Lot. And Lot was barely able to restrain them from doing it, but the men inside the house, the angels brought Lot back inside the house, closed the door, and blinded the men from finding the door, so they couldn't get in. And they couldn't find the door even, so Lot was saved, and his family was saved, and they were all brought out of the city, all of his family, other than his sons-in-law, who were supposed to marry his daughters. They were not saved, but the rest of his family was saved, and except for, of course, his wife turned back, and she became a pillar of salt. Lot's wife looked back, and she became a pillar of salt, and they'd all been warned in verse 17, do not look behind you, and do not stand still in all the district. Genesis 19 and 17. So this is March 19th, 2023. It's been a good study. It's 2107 hours. Ward Green here. Thank you for listening. Thank you for joining us for this study today. Little children, I hope you have a wonderful, wonderful day, night, whatever time it is. Praise Jehovah. Seek first the kingdom. And find peace through the knowledge of your Savior, Jesus the Messiah, whose willing sacrifice has opened the way for everlasting life, and whose name is the only one that has been given under heaven by which we must get saved. This is Ward Green once again. And what more can I say about this study? There's so many things I could quote from the Bible every day. I think we should be reading more Proverbs every day. But the progress in the study is coming along. I want to keep it short for today. And we're going to try and keep on going and hopefully get stronger as time goes on. I'll pray for you. You can pray for me, too, that I might get stronger and recover my full health. Or it's not a question of full health. I never had my health full for quite a number of years to have full health. So if you want to pray for me, I guess you might pray that I get more health than I've ever had. That would be what I would be praying for if I were praying for myself. But I find it difficult to pray for myself if I'm not actually, I can only pray for myself if I'm going to then use that. So I'm going to pray for myself only on the condition that if Jehovah makes me better, I'll promise to serve him better in the future and serve him with even more energy and more dedication. I'll just keep redoubling if I get more energy. So have a wonderful day once again, or evening, night, morning, whatever time it is, wherever you are. And I love you very, very much. Bye for now.